I'm here today in the home of Ed Parker in Altadena, California, and I met Ed back in high school at John Muir High School, and I didn't know at the time that you were like a year-round bicyclist, Ed. Are you still doing that?
I still am. I am still a year-round bicyclist.
Now, I wrote an article, we talked some time ago for the Pasadena Weekly, and I mentioned the fact that you bicycle almost 365 days a year, mm-hmm. and that you're involved in outdoor education. How do you deal with a day like today? I mean, it's pouring outside today. Do you bicycle on days like this?
I do. I went down the hill earlier this morning. If you have the right gear, there's no such thing as inclement weather.
That's not the right gear you've got on right now, though, is it?
No, it's not. It is not. No, this is indoor. I just have on some just a sweater and some rain pants.
For a bicyclist, what is the right gear? Just some waterproof cheap stuff, or Gore-Tex, or what are we talking?
Yeah, Gore-Tex is pretty popular these days, and I've seen Gore-Tex items at yard sales. I picked up a waterproof jacket, bright yellow. You can't miss the thing. At a yard sale for like, $10 or $15.
Okay, you're a big proponent of yard sales like I am, right?
Yes, yes.
Right? Why pay retail?
Why pay retail? Yeah. You can find these things. I found Patagonia. It's a popular mountaineering and outdoor adventure brand. Been around for a long time, started by a guy named Yvon Chouinard. They make quality products that have lifetime warranties for the life of the product. Gotten products from if you know what you're looking for, Salvation Army. I got a Patagonia down sweater from the Encino the Red Cross.
Okay.
Yeah, the Salvation Army. That's what.
Okay,
it is.
Good. I go there all the time and buy gear. I'm not too proud.
Yeah.
So what I remember back during the day bicycling in the rain, I discovered the need for a bumper. Right, because I had a black line on my back of mud. Right, so but I would guess that bicycling in the rain and bicycling year round that you do, that's maybe the least of your problems. Isn't there an issue like of the cars just don't see you?
Yeah, that I've been riding bicycles my entire life. I had a car. Once in my entire, I didn't get my driver's license until I was like 42 or 43 years old.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
You're 42 years old and you got your driver's license.
That's when I got my driver's license.
Didn't you need it for ID purposes?
I had a California ID, but I never had, driving-wise, no. I really hadn't driven that many vehicles. My first vehicle, I was a proud owner of a Toyota 4Runner, man. That thing, four-wheel drive, that thing was awesome. And mm-hmm. But I got it in the Central Valley, which was a great place to kind of like learn how to drive.
Okay.
Because you got a lot of open roads out there in the backcountry and stuff like that.
Right.
It was a great...
That sounds like my mother. She learned how to drive when she was in her 40s. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've only had one car, and I only had it for a couple of years, but I've been a bicycle commuter my whole adult life.
Well, so just as a for example, where would you be commuting from? You lived in the Pasadena area most of your life, so you're going down to the college and...
Down to the college, down to the store, down to the beach. Yeah, I used to ride to the beach. Now
well, the beach is not a small ride. That's like 20 miles away.
It's all uphill.
Yeah, what beach are we talking from Pasadena?
Go down to Venice, Santa Monica.
Okay.
I've been down as far as Beach, things
okay.
like that.
So we're talking all day.
All
pretty
day,
much.
Right.
Because I've driven to Santa Monica on my bicycle, and I think I went down to end of Los Feliz and out Sunset and end up at Santa Monica.
Yeah, there's a number of ways to go. We used to head through Rick Strange, good friend of mine, childhood friend.
That's Rick Strange he's mentioning. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Rick. Yeah, man. If you catch the podcast, I haven't seen your brother. I got your phone number, but my old phone died, and I can't get a battery for it.
Okay, I doubt Rick's listening to this, but you never know.
You never know, yeah.
And then I've done Rosemead. If you know Southern California, you take Rosemead all the way out. That's the long way, though, isn't it?
That's the long way down to Long Beach, and that's how you had to do it back in the 70s. When Rick and other people were riding, you had to ride down Mount Rosemead with all the traffic.
Yeah.
And it was insane. I actually got hit down in Seal Beach by a guy in a U-Haul van one time down there. And
really?
Yeah, because he thought I should have been riding my bike on the sidewalk instead of in the street.
So I think I got hit once on a bicycle and maybe twice on a motorcycle. So was that the only time you got hit?
I've been hit by a car. I hit the car once. And I had a collision in Fresno with another bicycle, and that's the extent of my bicycle.
That's not bad for your whole life long.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as a bicyclist, you have to be a little more alert. You mean, because I see bicyclists who are arrogant, who are out in the middle of the street, and I'm thinking, what is this guy's trip? He might think he has a right to the road, and I understand that, but I'm in a 3,000-pound vehicle or 10,000 pounds, and he's on a bicycle.
You tempt a bull, you'll get gored. There's some people out there that are kind of sour, you know, and just, you know, and I don't push the fates out there.
Yeah.
I obey the traffic laws, mm-hmm. you know, I let people know what I'm doing.
Yeah. I think you have to if you want to stay alive as a bicyclist.
You do. Yeah. On my bike, I've got how many points of reflection? I have a touring bike, so I have pannier packs, which have reflectors. I have a reflector behind my seat.
Mm-hmm.
I have a rear light. I have a light, a reflective light on the top of my helmet, plus the light on the front of my bike. Plus, I wear a vest at night. High visibility target.
Yeah,
you know?
that's important. And you know, people listening to this, I mean, we talk all the time about mm-hmm. with bicyclists. I've interviewed other bicyclists, like the Gomez brothers,
sure.
here in Pasadena,
sure.
and you know Rafael and Vicente,
sure. And
yeah,
Vicente,
yeah.
sure.
But the issue of year-round cycling, a lot of people think it's not practical. You know that it's well, maybe a guy who's fit like you can do it, and you're older than me though, aren't you?
No, I don't know.
We're about the same age. We're both in our 50s.
Yeah, we're in our 50s.
But the fact is, you wanted to do it and you made it work. And, mm-hmm. and actually, I wouldn't say that Southern California here is the most practical way, because I've lived in places that were flat. You could get anywhere you wanted to on a bike easily.
The Central Valley was fun.
And for those who don't know Altadena, you come up a steep hill 4 miles out of downtown Pasadena to get home, right?
I do.
So you got a hell of a workout every single day.
Yeah.
We got a note from the boss here.
Yeah. It's cool because if you stand at Lake and Mountain, if you're familiar with the Altadena Pasadena area.
Lake and Mountain.
Yeah, you can see the climb. You can totally see the climb, and it's steep because up here we're at 1,800 feet. Down at Mountain, you're probably at about. I don't know, but it's 8% grade. It's an 8% grade, and the descent is amazing. It's fun because the speed limit's 35 on Lake, but you know any cyclist worth his salt is going to try to bust that speed limit.
Going down.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I got a ticket once.
Did you really?
Yes.
I got a ticket in San Diego, but I went through a stop sign. That wasn't speeding.
Oh, I was speeding.
Yeah.
I got stopped by. I'll never forget the guy's name. The guy's name was Officer Bob Minnett.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
Bob Minnett of the California Highway, and he was a really cool young guy.
Yeah.
And he was really, but I was going down New York. I used to work at what was the Catholic hospital right there, Saint?
Oh, Saint Luke's.
Saint Luke's.
That's where I was born.
Really?
Saint Luke's Hospital, East Pasadena.
I was working in the shipping and receiving, and I was late, so I was flying, and I was in really good shape.
And the cop wasn't sure whether to congratulate you or give you a ticket.
Right. Yeah, it's right there in New York and Pepper, that little stop sign right there.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I blew through there at about like 47 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah. You're down. There's a long extension. And then who wants to stop at the bottom?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I blew through there.
You're lucky no car was coming.
That's what his big lecture to
me. Yeah, you're lucky no car was coming.
He goes, you don't know how many people I've scraped up off of this and everything.
Yeah.
But he didn't catch me until I got down to you. I was close to Altadena Drive because I couldn't believe.
That's a long way.
Yeah, man. I couldn't believe he was trying to get. And then all of a sudden he's like, you on the bicycle. I was like, me?
Right.
He's like, where are you going? I'm almost late for work. He's like, he goes, what time do you have to be there? I go, 8 o'clock. He goes, where do you work? I go, at St. Luke's. He goes, it's 3 minutes late. You would have made it anyway. Let me see your ID.
I see. So you were late that day.
I was late.
What's this about?
That's the speeding ticket.
Down
New York.
Okay, yeah.
But it's a badge of courage, or not a badge of courage, but it's a badge of honor to get a speeding ticket. Like in cities like Davis, I mean, people try to get speeding tickets. I mean, it's kind of flat. But,
you know. I think it was Vicente Gomez.
Yes.
He told me, and I didn't believe him at first, that he bicycled to Pasadena and Long Beach back and forth when he went to school there. And I think he was, maybe he stayed one night there and took a few, you know, took a few days. But that's a long bicycle. That's a long commute to go to school.
That is.
I mean, to drive there, you can get there in 45 minutes when there's no traffic.
Well, those two guys were amazing anyway. I can remember back in the days when they were racing on their tandem. And there was this, I mean, it's road racing lore. I mean, these guys were in this race in the lead. They had a horrible crash. They got up.
Where was this?
Oh, I don't remember. Somewhere like in the Eastern Sierra, mm-hmm. some gnarly road race for tandem bicycles.
Okay.
And they crashed, regained first, crashed again, finished the race like in second, but because of all the stuff they went through, you would have smoked everybody.
Really?
Hey,
really?
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who don't know, the Gomez brothers are kind of legendary in Pasadena in bicycling. I think they were instrumental in doing a lot of the races around the Rose Bowl.
Around the Rose Bowl.
And everybody knows the Rose Bowl, but it's famous for bike racers who want to practice.
It is. Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Rose Bowl. Basically, it's Monday through Sunday.
But Thursday is the big day, right?
Thursday's the big day.
Because after work, sometimes I drive through the Rose Bowl. And I'm telling you, I don't know if this is the season right now. I think it starts maybe in spring until like November. There's like a pack of 100 or 200 guys. It's awesome to watch them go by. One time, I went by there, and it must have been seconds after it happened, but there were 70 guys in the street.
Sure.
So one guy went down, everybody went down.
Dominoes.
And there was, you could see blood, and no ambulances or anything yet. It was bad. And I was about to stop. But somebody said, there's too many guys there. There's too many people who are stopped. You're going to do something. You'll just get in the way. But so bicycling can be serious.
We know
guys who have died because they were racing and they fell. I think it was Raphael telling me a friend of theirs. He just would not wear a helmet.
Wouldn't wear it.
And when he went down, he hit his head bicycling and he died. Died on the spot.
You know, I broke one of my helmets. I was going about.
So that was your helmet, not your head.
Not my head.
Yeah.
I was going about 5 miles an hour. And some kind of way, there was these two little sticks just in the middle of the street, just crossed.
Yeah.
I mean, just plain, just wooden limbs, not big.
Just blew in there somehow, huh?
Yeah, and my front wheel hit them, and for some reason, it just locked up and pissed me off. And
but you were by yourself, though, right?
Yeah. And I went head first, but I went head first at 5 miles an hour, and I mean, my helmet cracked.
Oh, 5 miles an hour, so you were going slow.
I was going slow.
The few times that I've fallen off my bike, it was slow speed.
Mm-hmm.
One time I was driving down Colorado, and it was early morning on my bicycle, and there was a crack, an odd twist, where there was a crack in the street. And my tire caught it, and it twisted, and I fell right off, and my leg was all messed up. And I wasn't even going 5 miles an hour. It was very slow.
On my bike... I carry a small first aid kit for abrasions, things like that. Not necessarily for me, but for other people. And I've been on the bike path, and seen somebody sitting there bumming, and it's kind of nice if you got a little small first aid kit that's got and just get some clean water, and get the thing kind of clean, and a little gauze and a little.
Especially these bicyclists up in the mountains, because I see accidents all the time on the mountain bikes. You know, it's interesting that gas is now, $5 a gallon here in California? You wouldn't know.
I don't know what that's like, really.
This is the last week of February in 2012, and gas prices, they say, are not an all-time high, but they're getting really high right now. So you're not dealing with any of that. That's great. What advice would you give to people? You've been doing it your whole life, but what about somebody who thinks they want to save some money by commuting on a bike? What kind of things should they be aware of?
The thing is that be aware of where you're located to work. If you live in the Pasadena area, you work in the Pasadena area, and you live like within 5 miles of work, what's wrong with cycling a couple times a week? You'd be surprised because 5 miles goes by pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The nice thing about cycling is that it's pretty easy on your joints. It might not be too easy on your butt at first. That's what people usually complain about.
Right.
But with the technology and seats and things like that these days, you can overcome that. They're kind of expensive for comfort on a seat, but you can spend $100 and get something really nice.
Yeah, I'd have to say, for me, that's the thing, is the comfortable seat. Now, I know Rich Redman. He's a fellow that we talked on one of the podcasts in Pasadena Weekly. I interviewed him once. But he was he's a teacher. He's in his 70s now. Mm-hmm. And until he retired about a year ago, he bicycled every day from Altadena up in the Meadows, which is mm-hmm. extreme northwest Altadena, to Highland Park.
Okay.
Now, that's more than 5 miles.
Yeah, man.
And so he was telling me the path that he took because he wanted to bicycle. He wanted to be able to commute. Going there is easy because it's downhill,
mm-hmm.
but he had to take a route to avoid the liquor stores and where the winos hang out and where the on-ramp to the freeway is. And I thought this was really clever, the route that he took. It wouldn't be my first choice, but I can see why he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Then coming back, he had a way from Highland Park to Altadena that made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it was basically, he went up on the west side of the Rose Bowl up in Linda Vista.
Sure.
And he crossed over up by Woodbury there and, mm-hmm. you know, by the dam. And everybody wouldn't know what we're talking about. But
right. But
that's what everybody would have to do, find
right.
a convenient route
convenient
in their own neighborhood.
Path. And what I do is, you know what, I shoot straight down here. I weave my way because I live at the top of Lake Street, like a stone's throw from anybody that's a day hiker or anything like that from the San Miguel Trail.
Right.
And
the very top of Lake,
the very top
there's
of
one
lake.
Of the major trails that takes you into the Angeles National Forest
mm-hmm.
and San Miguel Echo Mountain, all of those.
I work my way, and it's pretty easy because people in Altadena are pretty bicycle wary, so it's pretty easy getting out of Altadena. I go down through the Rose Bowl, and I go out of Royal Seco. And go out the backside that way. It's really beautiful. There's one hill you got to climb. One.
If you're trying to get to where?
Highland Park.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And out of Royal
yeah.
Seco, and then go out the back way right there. And
but generally right speaking,
there.
Do you use Lake Avenue? This is like a major
no,
thoroughfare.
No, I don't.
You avoid
the
Lake
Avenue. I stay off Lake.
Okay, good.
Unless it's early in the morning, or I just want to get some. I don't like being on that Lake Street bowling alley.
Yeah.
If it's early in the morning. And the highway patrol 35-mile-an-hour speed limit things down there, I have
avoid
to
avoid it. Yeah, yeah.
No, I have to go down and
oh,
light
you
it.
Do.
I have to go down and light it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. You got to light it up.
Yeah, I got to make it flashlights, y'all. You know.
Make
like
sure there's no photo ticket
yeah.
thing going on, right?
I hope not.
Yeah. You've never gotten a ticket that way?
That way.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
No. No. I usually do about 43, 45, something like that
yeah.
down there.
Now, besides yeah. the bicycling, tell us about the other kind of work that you do.
Currently, I work part-time seasonal with a company called Naturalists at Large.
Naturalists at Large.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They're based in Ventura, California, and they run outdoor environmental education courses throughout California, northern, central, and southern California, and they even do a river trip. A week-long river trip on the lower, and I do believe the upper Colorado River.
Did you say the lower Kern?
No, Colorado.
Oh, the Colorado.
Yeah,
okay.
in Arizona. So right. they cover that much.
Those are like week-long trips?
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah, for from fifth grade, like 3 days. Like fifth graders, I did a trip last year with fifth graders for 3 days out to Leo Carrillo.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at natural history, flora, fauna. We look at streams. We do stream surveys. We look at things that live in the streams. We do games, activities, initiatives.
So you had to know a lot, I mean, not just how to run the canoes or whatever and how to backpack,
mm-hmm.
but you're really basically a teacher teaching the children. Are you one of the teachers too?
Well, teachers come along with us. They're the chaperones.
Okay.
The naturalists, the teachers come along with us, there's usually a teacher with one naturalist.
Okay.
So
you had to learn a lot of local lore, local plant and faunal lore when you move it into an area?
You do. We have, there's always a staff day. We get there the day before anybody
okay,
arrives.
So they kind of briefing you on the terrain.
Oh, yeah. We do a complete staff day.
Yeah.
And depending on where we are, we usually have it with park rangers, things like that.
Uh-huh.
So they give us the runaround. They give us, you know, maybe say it's some type of flora that's in bloom right now. And
yeah.
we go out and we check that out. We look at all the trails. We look at the streams. Can we do stream sea surveys here? What kind of games and initiatives can happen?
And what grade did you say you're doing? Fifth graders?
Fifth through 12.
Oh, fifth through 12.
Yeah.
Okay. Because at the fifth grade level, you just have to stay a step ahead of them. 12th grade might be a different story.
Fifth grade, they're busy.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
know a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, they catch on pretty quick. So with fifth graders, they're a handful. They're really chatty for one thing. So you have to be able to have a big bag of tricks. I mean, to keep.
How do you mean that, big bag of tricks?
Well, with games and, you know, say, you know, it's a night exercise or something like that. You know, you can play a game like Predator and Prey, or you can do.
What's Predator and Prey? It sounds like my old camp days.
Yeah,
we did Capture the Flag.
Same thing.
North, yeah.
Same thing, kind of Capture the Flag, except you have somebody that's a predator, blindfolded, like sitting in the middle of a trail, and you have everybody else trying to sneak past. There are psychic.
So your bag of tricks isn't necessarily stuff that you carry along. It's the knowledge of different kind of games.
It's the knowledge of different kind of games.
Put them to work, yeah.
Right. There's always teaching moments. When you're out there, you know, what's this? How does this grow? Well, let's discover. You know, I'm not sure. Let's discover. We have. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have at our disposal just massive kits that we carry, and we also have. What do you mean
kits? Like first aid kits?
Oh no, not first aid kits. Learning kits.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Well, like we have like our stream field survey kit has like it's got. Magnifying glasses.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Got eyedroppers. It's got different 4x5 waterproof 4x5 cards with what you might find in that stream.
I see. Who prepares all of these educational kits?
The people back at base camp.
Okay.
Up in Ventura.
So they're preparing it for your location. It's not mm-hmm. something they order out of a catalog somewhere.
Oh no. You can especially all these trips are they've been Naturalist at Large has been around since the 80s.
Uh-huh.
So they've been doing trips all up and down in, you know, at these different sites, like Pinnacles. I had never been to the Pinnacles National Monument, which is up in the Central Coast in the mountains up there. It's uh-huh. beautiful.
So I learned all this stuff the hard way then.
Yeah, man.
I should have had one of those kits.
Yeah. Or a trip with Naturalists at Large or Outward Bound or things like that.
Yeah.
I've gotten a chance.
Did you work with Outward Bound?
I did. I was an instructor at the North Carolina Outward Bound School for a season.
And that's more than a week-long thing, isn't it?
The shortest trip I did with Outward Bound was 10 days. The longest was 28.
Mm-hmm. Now, with Outward Bound, you're still teaching them things,
mm-hmm.
but are you...
More hard skills.
More which?
Hard skills.
Such as?
Map and compass, wilderness advanced first aid, okay. CPR, land navigation, rock climbing, whitewater canoeing. So they have a 3-day solo where they're out by themselves, and you know.
What are they expected to do during the 3-day solo?
The 3-day solo, basically, you get just the gear that you bring. You get a tarp.
Is each student by themselves?
By themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And is it your job is to make sure they don't get into trouble in 3 days?
In 3 days, yeah. It's usually after the first expedition, where we introduce them to food and cooking and how to prepare food, how to use the bathroom, how to look for a spot to use the bathroom. You know, like on the East Coast, like out here, we have to worry about poison oak. Out there, you got to worry about poison ivy
mm-hmm.
and poison sumac,
mm-hmm.
mostly poison ivy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's red. Once you see it,
oh, yeah,
you'll know it.
I know.
You'll know it. It's
yeah.
like, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
And there's lots of it in the Pisgah because it's a really green. The Pisgah National Forest is in North Carolina. It's outside of Asheville. North Carolina, in a little town called Bivard, in the mountains up there where the base camp was, the Outward Bound base camp was. Really neat area. It was where the cradle of forestry started. It's where forestry actually started because
mm-hmm.
they really decimated that whole area back at the turn of the century. But
so before a trip like that begins, the students get some kind of orientation on what to bring and pack?
No,
and all that?
The only thing they get is they get a questionnaire. They get what to bring.
So they basically just show up with whatever they got on the list
in a duffel bag.
Wow!
And their Outward Bound trip actually starts when they say bye to mom and dad at the airport.
I see.
Because we don't go to base camp. We meet them at the airport in the vans with the gear.
Now, what kind of students are you getting on Outward Bound? Is it people having trouble at home or just average youth or what?
Average youth. I would say you can get scholarships. I would say they're from middle class and middle class and upper middle class
uh-huh,
kids. Troubled? No. A lot of them, the parents...
Because there are groups like that,
sure.
that try to put you through
in
wilderness.
Yeah, courses like that.
Yeah,
they do have courses like that.
Yeah.
But these are just your everyday, middle-aged, you know.
Well, you know, my experience on longer trips is that there's all the nuts and bolts stuff that you have
mm-hmm.
to know about and be prepared to teach them. I always found that the learning experiences came when something went wrong. fight, an argument, a fire that gets, you know what I'm saying? A fire gets out of hand.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're the supervisor and you're the dispute mediator and all that kind of stuff. That's actually more real than just the Boy Scout stuff, you know?
You know, and it's getting prepped for stuff like that is, you know, a week before the trip even starts. You know, we got to look at the course area where we're going. We got to see how many user days, because it depends on when you're in a forest area, when you're guiding. There's a thing called user days, and
what's that mean?
A user day is how many days you get counted. You get charged for one day on your, you know, you get so many days on a permit.
This is the legal aspect you're talking about.
Legal aspect,
yeah.
You get so many user days, and with Outward Bound, because we have so many people and so many trips going out. Luckily, we're about the only ones, or it'd be really a mess to get the user days in. Each student counts, like, for one user day. You got 10 people, say you got like 500 user days, so you can see each person. You got like 30 user days for 28 days.
Okay.
You know,
so when you're doing your prep, you guys are like talking about what happens if, what if this happens?
We do suicide, everything from suicide awareness to runaway to you name it.
Have you had issues like that? No. That's good.
My first trip was a nightmare. The kids just would not, they just wouldn't behave. They were smoking cigarettes.
That wasn't on the bring list, was it?
No, it was not. I was pretty good. I turned duffel bags inside out, took the little compartments apart, did everything.
Oh, and they still smuggled in the cigarettes.
One kid, dude. Yeah, you know, we were sitting out. We were in Lightning Drill because a storm had blew through.
Where's Lightning Drill?
Lightning Drill is where you have to sit out in the open.
A Lightning Drill.
Yeah, lightning,
okay.
Like thunder, lightning.
Okay.
Yeah, we were sitting in Lightning Drill.
Getting wet,
cold, and sitting on our insulite pads. And I was sitting at the top of this little ridge. And all of a sudden, this, you know, this big waft of cigarette smoke comes wafting. I'm like, who the heck is that?
So you were deciding whether to reprimand him or congratulate him for keeping the cigarette going.
Well, I couldn't really reprimand him during the middle of a lightning storm, because it was during a rock climbing segment where we had to rappel off the side of this ridge. We had to set up a little anchor point and a belay station and a rappel point to get the kids off. So if I wanted to go down to chastise him, I would have had to like wrap down in during the storm to go down to find him. But they went on. They actually had a mutiny on us.
And oh really? Yes. Mutiny?
Yes, they mutinied on us.
Outward Bound mutiny.
Yeah, they mutinied. They decided they weren't going to do anything. So the other instructor and I decided that's fine. So we went and laid down, let him figure it out.
Now, this was a backpacking trip?
Yeah, this is about day 16 or 17.
Of how many days?
22.
22 days.
Yeah.
So they just wanted to stay there and do nothing?
They wanted to stay there and do nothing. They wanted to go home. They wanted what are those little hamburgers on the East Coast? The White Castles?
Oh, the White Castles.
they wanted Bag O30 White Castles hamburgers.
And you were supposed to go get them?
Yeah, well, that's the thing by learning by mistakes. I mean,
was this your first trip?
That was my very first one.
Yeah. So the manual usually doesn't cover such things, does it?
It does not.
It's on the job training.
It's on the job training.
Yeah, yeah.
But we sat there, I mean, for hours, and then it was like around dinner time, and they said, okay, you know, so we had to gather up, and then we talked about it, got everything situated, and the next day was a resupply day, and we had to be off. You know, at the trailhead to meet the van to get our next 7-day supply of food.
That was the last 7 days then for that trip.
It was going to be like around the last 10 days.
And they all were going to stay. They stayed with you?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they figured we got it all figured out. It always works out. You know, that's one of the things on those trips.
Because this reminds me of guys in the military that talk about operations, and it never goes the way you think.
Never goes the way you
plan, because there's real life that gets in the way.
I've worked with a lot of people that have degrees in outdoor education and things like that, and all mine is from practical, outdoor, observation, knowledge, just being out there doing it with people that have been out there before me.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, like 75% or more of that stuff you learn in those EOE classes.
What's EOE?
In environmental outdoor education courses. It doesn't work in practical application. It works in a controlled environment, But if
so in other words, in the classroom, they're telling you how to deal with some kind of an outdoor crisis.
Yeah.
It works in the classroom, but not in the field.
Not with real 16-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
yeah.
with real 16-year-olds with real emotional stuff.
So this is really important.
It is.
I mean, because the real world operates that way, and you know how people are worried about how to prepare for a crisis? A class helps you.
It does.
A class helps you, but you learned by the School of Hard Knocks.
I did.
And I take it that you're probably a patient individual.
I am.
Right? I mean, you listen to somebody, and then you decide what's the best course of action for everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is what that you know when you're guiding and you're doing things like that. I mean, it's always a learning experience. I don't think I've guided one trip that, you know, the same way. No way, because the people are different. The energy's different. The environment's different. The environment is changing. You're in a living laboratory out
right,
there.
Right, right.
It's just incredible what's happening.
I mean, you
out
have
there.
To be a very flexible sort of
you
a
do.
Person. What would you say in terms of, you know, your problem solving? Obviously, you've developed problem solving skills in negotiation. If you were to give somebody advice for life, not necessarily for the trail, what would be the most important things that you would pass along from what you've learned? In all these years of doing this?
I think one of the key things that I've got, and I've been backpacking since I was 9 years old, I'm 54 now, and I've never stopped. I don't intend
Oh, you are younger than me. You're just a baby compared to
me. Okay. Yeah, but I would say one of the things it's taught me is patience and observation. You know, it's really taught me a lot of patience.
Patience, I understand. Elaborate on observation. What do you mean exactly? Like observing the student, observing the surroundings, or all of that, or what?
All of that, and especially the surroundings. You know, I guess I'm a scientist in without having really gone to school, because I'm always wondering, you know, how does this work? How does this grow? Why is this way? And that's one of the cool things about being outside is you can be a scientist all day long, and with Google, you could find out.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, we didn't have that growing up.
No, man. I mean, you had to go to Eaton Canyon. You had to go to the McCurdy Nature Center.
Right. And then Mickey Long or one of those guys go through books for an hour. Yeah. No, I know all about that.
Hey,
what's this? Yeah, that's right. And they would go look it up. Yeah.
It would be cool because when I was, I wasn't a bad kid or a bad student or anything like that. I was a truant.
Right.
But I would do my truancy up here in Las Flores Canyon and over at Eaton Canyon.
Well, I would do the Arroyo Seco. Yeah, but it didn't hurt my grades that much.
No. It's amazing. But, you know, I think the main thing is with being outdoors is, for me, is, man, you know what? I get to relax.
That's true on a certain level.
I get to relax.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you don't even, I notice it more with other people, especially with kids over a period of time, especially when it comes to esteem, you know, any kind of esteem, self or, you know, identify or whatever. You watch somebody grow over those days, even a short 2, 3, 4, 5 day trip, like your trip to Whitney, you can watch somebody actually show them a picture of themselves, like, you know, have them look in a mirror.
They're like
one.
Insecure and uncertain at the beginning.
You'd be surprised.
And then suddenly they're doing a lot of things.
I've had people tell me, you know, small women or small men, you know, I don't know, I can't carry a 50-pound pack. Well, you don't know until you try.
Right.
You know. And we're not walking 3,000 miles an hour or anything like that. This is a casual walk.
Right.
The first day, like when you're doing Whitney, if you go over the Cottonwood Pass, you got to go over 12,000 foot pass, which, you know, is no easy feat. You got to be in pretty good shape with a 50-pound pack. But it's only about 4 or 5 miles the first day, and then you kind of like just cruise. But you got all day to get there.
Yeah.
It's not a race.
Yeah.
You know. With anything, day hikes, anything. That's why they're day
this
hikes.
Is probably why people who live in the city all the time ought to find ways to get to the wild areas.
You know what? That observation. I'll bring that, you know. All the times I've been in the city, I've been robbed once. It is because I was not being observant. I got robbed at gunpoint. thing was, I saw some in my
anybody I know rob you?
No, I don't know. Just a couple guys out to you know, get some stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
And they got it, dude, but I'm still here. But you know, the thing is that I learned to look. You know, like, my field of vision is better.
It's got to be bigger.
It's got to be bigger out there, you know, especially in some neighborhoods. You know, if you're in a bad neighborhood or, you know, in a neighborhood that's not so hot or you've never been there, you know, be a little bit more aware. You know, it's not like Altadena, like where I live here. I can pretty much just lollygag around any time of the day or
night. It's not quite the ghetto here.
No, it's not. Yeah. Or even in parts of Pasadena or whatever. Yeah. You know, just being aware of your surroundings.
But you're saying that being in the outdoors kind of expanded
that.
Your awareness.
It did.
Because you know what I see in the city? I see people all the time in their own little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
They're in downtown. They're in downtown LA. They're in their own little bubble. They don't want to see who's around them.
No.
They become the victims.
They do.
You know?
They do.
And I'm downtown LA. I'm checking everything out.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything, you know? And not from a paranoia point of view.
Yeah.
You know what?
You might see friends.
You might see friends. There's a smile. How about smiling at somebody?
Right.
You have, that might be the first smile they got of. You don't know what's on their mind.
Yeah. There was a homeless guy that once said to me, because I talked to him and he wanted money. I gave him some food. This was down at Philippe's in downtown.
Okay.
And he said, you know, you're the first person that actually talked to me. I think he said 2 weeks. I said, you're kidding. He said, well, no, there's people that say, you know, get out of here, or they toss money at me, but you're the first person that actually had a conversation with me.
Wow.
And I thought that was really interesting, because I think I was kind of that way. I mentioned that I had been homeless for a while, so I had a whole different I had a whole different point of view about guys on the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like suddenly they're real people. They've got a real story. I still have to decide, do I want to take the time? Right, you know, because they're there and they're just trying to get by.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to observe them, to look at them, even analyze, are they? Because there's guys that are just scanning you too, scamming you. You know.
Sure.
So yeah, observation is a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Observation is huge. You know, observation comes in handy as a guide. You gotta be on your toes 24/7.
Right.
Even after those clients go to bed. You know, you and the other instructor have to have, you know, a little, you know, what happened today, whether, you know, what went right, what went wrong.
Go over the day,
know, were there any near misses? If so, why, what happened?
How to avoid it
how
tomorrow.
How to avoid it tomorrow.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing, you know, checking in. I check in with everybody on long trips. You know, you're on my poop list, and, you know, I have a poop list, and everybody's on my poop list, and, you know, I got everybody down. And you have to come get checked off. You know, did you go? Because it's really important. You can't not be in the backcountry 7-10 days without going number two. You can't do it.
Right,
you get staph infections and bad stuff happens.
Right.
And
that's interesting. Oh, that's right. People will try to not do that.
They will and not say anything.
Yeah.
Ed has a poop list, and you have to let Ed know when you know it might be day two or three or four, but let me know when, because if not, then you know. We got to talk about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Yeah. You know, while you're talking, I'm realizing you have to be, as a guide, very concerned about the students. They might be adults and their well-being and the stress that they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
You've got you to deal with too.
Yeah.
What are the greatest hardships that you personally have had to deal with? I mean, you're probably carrying. I might be wrong, but are you carrying like more weight than the average person?
You do. You and know? Starting off with the first aid kit, with most guide services I work for. There's a reputable company here in West Los Angeles called Adventure 16. A lot of people that do outdoor activity probably.
They're actually from San Diego, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, they have their big West LA store here. They're based in San Diego.
Yeah.
I guided for them, and you know
was that like day trips or what?
Those were. I taught map and compass, and I taught beginning, intermediate, and I guided their Sierra trips.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So other personal challenges, that's what we're getting into.
Yeah.
Besides weight, I mean, it's cold for you,
too,
right?
Yeah, the first aid kit, 7 pounds, without the rest of the group gear. Plus, you know, I would usually bring an extra fleece or something like that, just, you know, usually a smaller one, usually for women, because generally they get a little colder than men. Generally, that's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been my experience.
There's nobody, no Sherpas coming along carrying stuff.
No, nobody's coming along. Yeah. If anything's going to happen, we're our own little community for the next 2, 3, 5, 7, 20 days.
But you guys don't ever use pack mules or horses or anything.
No. It's all
is on your back.
Bipod.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all on your back, 5, 6 days, 3 days, a weekend trip. Some people just want to see if they like it. But I recommend do not go backpack. I mean, just somebody says, I got an extra backpack, and we're going to take you backpacking. I would highly recommend, if you've never been backpacking before, find a reputable guide company and take a beginning backpacking class.
Mm-hmm.
You will not go wrong.
Okay.
You will really understand if you like it or not.
So you right there might be defining a lot of my early mistakes and being cold and hungry and cut.
Cold,
and all,
hungry.
Because I didn't take a backpacking class. We would just go and didn't even know where we were going half the time. We would end up in the campsites up here in the Angeles Forest.
When I guide courses, there's always an in-shop, 1 to 2 in-shop classes. We have...
We cover all your gear and stuff?
We talk about gear. We talk about what to bring, what not to bring. I tell everybody, bring all your gear. Pack your pack before you come. Bring all your gear.
Oh, to the class.
Oh, yeah. Bring your stuff.
So you can see what they have, what they need.
What they have, what they need. And we're going to get rid of half of it. We're going to get rid of half of it.
Yeah. I went backpacking with a guy one time who had never gone backpacking. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it was only like 5 miles up. He had a bunch of cans in his pack, mm-hmm. and a can opener. He didn't even have a way to cook it.
No. Yeah, and that's tonnage. I have backpacking food is, well, whatever. It's not great.
Have things improved?
Things have improved. Some of the meals have improved.
Are you still buying like Mountain House or what?
No, I've never, Mountain House and things like that. No, I'm a big fan of making, taking sauces.
What do you mean sauces? Like in a can or in a pouch or what?
In a pouch. Uh-huh. In a pouch.
So you just go to the supermarket and get your meals that way.
Angel hair pastas, cheeses, things like that.
Yeah.
Or work really well. I have an Outback oven which allows me to bake in the backcountry.
Okay, so you can take like flour and make your own bread.
They brownies, focaccia bread, whatever. I can bake.
Okay. So you don't even buy freeze dried food.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
and it's very expensive.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. No, they make meals from India. They have these really nice meals from India that they sell at Trader Joe's, Punjab potatoes, things like that.
Which is like civilian MREs.
It is.
Yeah.
They are. And you just toss them in some hot water and with some brown rice. You know, one of those success rices.
Right.
Brown rice. And it's a real easy cleanup. One pot. You don't even have to put it in the pot.
What do you think of MREs?
I got to tell you, I've never eaten one, dude.
Oh, okay, all right. I'll have to get you one sometime. You probably won't like them.
I probably won't. Yeah. I won't. I've got, like I said, there was a couple that made the Outback oven. It's a Teflon pan. They made them in 12 and like 14 inch. But you can. It's got a little diffuser plate. It's got a convection dome. Anything you can bake here in your convection oven at home, you can bake out in the backcountry.
Uh-huh.
They're not great for long trips, but for short trips.
Yeah, because see, most people, I think, once they get their gear together and they've got a good sleeping bag, food is always an issue, or it's often an issue. And
food is never an issue on a Roving Wolf Adventures trip. Never an issue.
Okay.
We talk about food and we deal with people's food issues. We can do vegan, we can do vegetarian. It doesn't matter. Trips I guide and things like that. We're food conscious.
In the beginning, did you have to go through a bit of a learn? No, so you got that figured out early.
Yeah, I got that. Well, I had a really good scoutmaster named Mr. Allen.
You were in the scouts here in Pasadena.
Oh, yeah.
What troop?
Oh, I think it was 71 or 70 or 71. We used to meet at the church right there on Altoona Drive and Glen Rose.
Oh, okay. All right.
They have a lot of AA meetings and things like that right there now.
Is that church still there?
That's still there.
Okay.
That's where we used to have our meetings. We were a Trailwise Patrol.
Oh, it's a Methodist church then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My first backpacking trip, I was in Germany. I was in a transatlantic troop, a Cub Scout troop. Then I went to Weeblo Scouts. I went to Weeblo Scouts in Texas where I did my first backpacking trip at 9 and I was hooked. I knew I was going to do it the rest of my life. I don't know how.
Yeah.
But I knew I was going to do. I didn't know I was going to be a guide and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I knew I was going to backpack the rest of my life.
Yeah. How did you get your first work as a guide? Was somebody ask you, or was it through Outward Bound, or what?
You know, I'd have to say it would be taking my friends.
Okay, just doing it privately.
Just doing it privately here, and right here I would start, and I would go in at the end of Altoona Drive. We would start at the end of Altoona Drive, and we would hike up to Oak Wild?
Oak Wild. This is where I do a great number of my classes. Okay. You went up to the Upper Royal behind JPL.
Behind JPL, the Upper Royal, and we'd spend a night in Oak Wild, and then we'd hike up and through Little Bear Canyon into Bear Canyon.
Okay.
Spend a night in Bear Canyon, and then hike out of Bear Canyon up to the top of Mount Low, spend a night in Mount Low, and then I'd come out right here at the top of Lake
and you're home.
Lake, and I'd walk.
Right, you walk home.
200 feet, and I'm at my front door.
So, how many years ago did you do that?
In the 70s.
Yeah. So that's really cool.
Yeah, three day backpacking trips through the San Gabriels.
Yeah.
Right here in your backyard.
Right.
3 day back. Now that I'm older, if I was going to do it, I would actually go this way and hike down Bear Canyon.
Right, because it'd be easier. Yeah. I know what you're saying. Yeah. So then, was the first thing Outward Bound when somebody was hiring you to be a guide?
It was actually Adventure 16.
Oh, Adventure 16, okay.
I started by teaching land navigation, then I was teaching beginning.
And how did you learn the land navigation in there and did you study on your own? Oh, the Boy Scouts.
Boy Scouts, I had a really good...
You got the merit badge, I presume?
I did. I'm not the brightest tool in the shed or anything like that, but when somebody showed me topography... The first time somebody showed me a topographical map, and they said it was a two-dimensional representation of the 3D world, and he had this little display, and he showed it, and he goes, 2D, 3D, 2D, 3D. I was looking at it, and I went, what? And I looked at the map, and I looked back at the little display, and I looked back at the map, and I could actually see.
Right, 3D.
3D.
Okay, that's
and
good.
So once that
clicks in your brain,
you got it.
Yeah, you got it.
You
yeah,
got it.
Yeah. And is that what you taught at A16? How to read the map and then
how to adjust the map
with the compass?
Orienting the map.
Orienteering, all of that stuff.
Yeah, how to orient the map, and once the map's oriented, you can take that compass and put it away because you basically don't need it anymore unless you're going to do some sightings to do biangulation or triangulation.
Right.
And figuring out what your declination. That's no big deal.
Yeah.
Declination, the only thing you need to know about declination, is the angle difference between you and true north and you and magnetic north.
Right.
That's all it means.
It's a fancy word. Yeah.
That's it.
There was a guy that took my orienteering class at the college once.
Oh, great.
It was actually part of a semester course, and one night it was map and compass. And he came over to me afterward and said, I was very confused about the subject before I took this class. And he said, but I'm more confused now. So, I guess I failed.
But I
have it broken down now where somebody spends a few hours with me and they know how to read a map and they know how to read a compass.
I would teach 10 people at a time and 8 of them would get it.
Yeah.
Somebody would be completely lost.
Well, it's all math. If you're not good at math, you have trouble with a map and a compass.
Yeah. I don't even need, I think I've got it even simpler. I can even do it simpler without even all the math.
Yeah.
You don't need to. I mean, there's a lot of things that, especially navigating through the Sierra Nevada, again, once the map's oriented, you can take the compass, stick it in your pocket, because that is exactly how the land is in the real world. And you can just look at it. It's so big, you can look.
Yeah, going back to what you said earlier, observation is a key thing. Yeah.
You know, the key thing...
You're not relying on your tools, you're relying on your observation.
The key thing with having a map and a compass is knowing what they are and how to use them. Don't take them out there if you don't know what the heck you're doing with it. Where you start. That's the key. Don't pull it out after you're lost because it makes it kind of difficult to figure out where you are if you don't know where you started.
This is true. That's right. You carry them so you don't get lost.
That's right.
Right.
Know where you start.
Hey,
know where you're getting to.
There was a guy once at one of my classes. He pulled out one of the top-of-the-line Silvas.
Nice.
He paid... I pay no more than $10, but he paid a lot back then, $40, $50.
Oh, wow.
I think it was $60. It had a folding thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was showing us the swivels and the mirrors. And I said, well, do you know how to use it? He said, no, I don't know how to use it. I said, what'd you bring it for? He brought it to impress his friends.
And friends.
Yeah, but that was about it. Look, Ed, we're actually just out of time, and I enjoyed talking with you. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Maybe we can talk about some specific skills in the future.
Absolutely.
Maybe teach the listener on the radio how to use a map and a compass.
So, I can do that.
So in a few months, let's try to do that.
Let's try to do that.
Thank you very much, Ed.
We can do a 48-minute whirlwind of land navigation.
All right.
Can do that.
Thank you again.
All right, man. Peace.